The quote that Teresa read, of course, was Joseph. What would be the perfect foil against someone who was trying to hurt you? Someone who meant evil against you. What would be the perfect foil? That which they did to you, to hurt you, actually benefited you. Would that not squelch the enemy? That's what Joseph said. Because his brothers, as you know, sold him. And it turned out to be Joseph's good, and God used that. You know the one thing that Joseph had through all of that, and you know he was in a dungeon 12 years for a charge that was brought against him that was false. And what we're going to deal with today. Joseph had a mindset. I want to challenge your mindsets today and mine. Because Romans chapter 8 is about what the Spirit does for God's people. He resurrects us. He enables us to follow His law. He gives us a spirit of adoption. We're His children. He intercedes for us. But now we get to it in these last verses of Romans. And Paul says, as I said, it's an oblique command. It's a tangential command. We, as God's people, are to have a different mindset than the world. Now, I'm going to challenge something head on. Our circumstances and our situation is no different than those who do not have the Lord. Paul makes that eminently clear here in this passage. That is the enemy's lie, to get you disappointed with God. But our mindset about the circumstances and situation is to be different than the world's. We're going to go through the same things they do. The same ambiguities, the same inconsistencies, the same struggles. With this caveat. Here's where we have a leg up on the world. Those things have a different outcome for us. If your mindset, Paul says, you've got two choices in your mindset. I know someone, they're in the covenantal family, and they have a mindset, what Paul calls a mindset of the flesh, and he says, that's a mindset of death. And something happened to them 15 years ago. And they have a mindset of death concerning that thing that happened to them. Your mindset's not going to change the outcome. The circumstances and situations that you are struggling with have a positive outcome for God's people. Now, whether you have a mindset of death about it right now or whether you have a mindset of life and peace about it right now will not change that. God's going to do it. God's going to make those things work together for good for those people who love Him and those who are called according to His purpose. The difference for you here and now is you either experience what I would call death in evolution. You experience life with a mindset of death, or you experience life with a mindset of life and peace. The outcome's going to be still going to be what God wants it to be. I'm convinced in this person that I know, they are anything but an image bearer, the opposite of an image bearer. See, this is the enemy's game. The enemy's game is to get you to have a mindset of death about circumstances. Because the minute he does that, you are not an image bearer. And he goes off, as it were, like this. Took care of that. We're commanded to have a mindset of life and peace for this reason. Two reasons. It benefits us. You ever been around a bitter person? An angry, bitter person about something? How patently unattractive that is. An image bearer? They have a mindset of death. They're walking according to the flesh. Well, I trusted God. I read my Bible. I go to church, and still I'm no better off than this person over here who doesn't do any of those things. And the enemy says, bingo, gotcha. The outcome is different for God's people. Why should you have a mindset of life and peace? And you will only have a mindset of life and peace if you do what Paul says, walk according to the Spirit. Now, I don't know about you, but I toggle back and forth. I toggle back and forth. Wish I didn't. Talked about this in Bible study this morning. Mindset of the flesh. I have a mindset of death. I suffer. People in my environ suffer. Then I'll toggle back to a walking according to the Spirit, and I'll have a mindset of life and peace. You know what that does for me and what it'll do for you? I'm going to invite you to do this. It'll change your life. It changes the lives of those around you. Listen to this. It gives meaning, depth, and theological significance to these things. Paul keeps talking about these things, doesn't he? He says in verse 28, all these things work together. He says in verse 31, what are we to say about these things? Well, he's never identified these things. Would you not like that? If the circumstances and situations that we face, a mindset of death is everybody's against me. God's against me. I'm a failure. God doesn't love me. Nothing's working out for me. How about if you looked at those things with a mindset of life and peace, and it had meaning? Remember those three things? It helped me. I'm big on trilogies. Teresa knows that, of words. I like to do trilogies. Meaning? Boy, if my circumstances don't have meaning, I'm gonna do what Paul said. He says, we should just eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow we die. Remember he said that in the 15th chapter of Corinthians? Meaning. Does what you're going through have meaning? Does it have depth? And does it have theological significance? That's what a mindset of life and peace does. Our circumstances aren't different than the world's. No. That has not been my experience. We attended a mega church years ago. You know, that just got so tiresome. That just wore so thin. The rah-rah. And I remember they got up there one Sunday and they said that you should tithe because tithing works. And then they paraded people up front who tithed, and all of the great things that happened to them and all the money they got back, and the business opportunities that they had coming their way, and they went out to the mailbox, and there were checks in the mail, and then the guy gets up and says, you see, tithing works. You know, I think that was it for us. The message, the meta message, the covert message there is, if you do thus and so, your circumstances are going to materially improve, and tithing works. The reason you should tithe then is not because love of God, not because we're actually commanded to. No, you tithe because you will benefit. Egocentric, self-centered kind of theology. You see that? See, that's the enemy's lie. Isaiah says, and we'll get to this, but Isaiah says, the reason you come, God says, the reason you come to me is because I am God and there is no other, and you are commanded to come to me. The circumstances and situations in your life may not change one bit, but your mindset will, and the outcome of those situations and circumstances is going to change. Well, how can we have a mindset of peace when I'm going through what I'm going through, Tim? Well, I'll tell you how. We're going to dialogue with Paul on this. And Paul was one who was not writing this thing from the comfort of his recliner with the remote in one hand. Paul went through. You know what he went through. I'm going to tell you something else. You're listening to someone who is not speaking from the recliner either. I think that might give this message some credibility. Why can we have a mindset of peace when I'm faced to things that I'm faced with? Well, Paul says, Paul asks four questions in this great ending of his eighth chapter. Four questions. First question: if God's for us, who can be against us? He says, what are we to say about these things? Maybe you're saying that. Your circumstance, your situation. What am I to say about these things? Paul says, yep, that's a good question. Here's the number one thing. If God is for us, who can be against us? If God's for Tim, who can be against Tim? And Paul doesn't answer these questions. He gives a question, and then he gives a statement of fact. And he says, you draw your own conclusions. So I'm going to paraphrase it and answer it for us. If God's for us, who can be against us? Well, answer, no one. After all, this God who's for us didn't hesitate to offer up his own son, but gave him for us all. Question number two, who can bring an accusation against God's elect? Well, again, no one. After all, God is the one who justifies. Look, stop trying to curry other people's favor. Stop trying to be accepted and win approval of anybody else. God's the one that we need to curry his favor, because he's the one who justifies, not your friend, not your neighbor, not your husband, not your wife, not your children. Question three, who can condemn us? Well, again, no one. After all, Jesus Christ died to take that condemnation on himself. That's done, like Teresa said. There is therefore now no condemnation. Who can condemn God's people? No one. After all, Jesus is the one who died. He took that condemnation, and here's a very important point to that verse, verse 34. More than that, he was raised, and now he's doing something. We talked last week. What's Jesus doing in the heavenly realm? What's he up to? What's his job? Paul says, here's his job. He's interceding for you. Well, that's why no one can condemn me or you. That's why no one can accuse you. That's why God is on your side. You have the resurrected sovereign Lord of creation interceding for you right now. And any kind of accusation or condemnation that comes along, it's like Jesus of Nazareth, with his interceding, puts a force field around us, and he says, I'm not going to allow that accusation in. I'm not going to allow that condemnation in. And I'm not going to allow that situation to turn out badly for them. I'm interceding for them. That's my job. Facts. Paul lists facts to those three questions, and then he asks the fourth question, and here's what you ask. I'll bet you. Here's the question I ask. The most important question. Well, that's a great system, Paul. I really like that. I like knowing those three things and the answer to those three questions. Now, here's the question I have for you, Paul. Can something interrupt that? Can something get me out of that? Can something peel me out of that system? I love God, and I have the Spirit, and I'm walking according to the Spirit, and I have received the Spirit of adoption, and I'm in Christ, and I like to know that he's for me, and I like to know that no one can accuse me. I like to know that no one can condemn me. Paul, can I stay there? What's the assurance? Paul says, you bet. The fourth most important question, who can separate us from that interceding love of Christ? Who can drive a wedge in there? Paul says, same answer, no one. No one can take you out of that system. Now hang on to this, because I know you struggle with this. You ever feel unloved by God? Who can separate us from the love of Christ, to me, has two meanings. And as I told Teresa, after everything I say, just assume there's a little thing attached that says, as I told Teresa. When I read that over and over and over again, and then I said, you know what that verse means, 35, at the top of your back of your devotional? It means two things. Who can stop Christ from loving you? Who or what can stop Christ from interceding for you? It also means, who or what can stop you from loving Christ? Oh, that's a different wrinkle. Can anything stop Christ from loving you? Paul says, nope. And then Paul says, and by the way, and I think this is the litmus test of genuine saving faith, nothing can stop you from loving him. Nothing. I thought of my family. And Teresa brought up marriage. And I'm pretty confident, well, I know, nothing could stop me from loving my wife and my sons and my daughters. Nothing can get in that. No wedge. Conversely, you want assurance? I'm also highly confident nothing will stop them from loving me. No wedge, no separation. Do you know what comfort there is in that? Do you talk about a mindset of life and peace? And then Paul lists some formidable enemies that are bent on separating us from him. Or at least this. He wants to give you the idea that you're separated from him. He just wants to plant a seed, like he did with that person that I mentioned. Formidable enemies bent on separation. And all of these things that Paul lists are physical threats to our bodies. Affliction, anguish, persecution, poverty, famine, danger, physical illness, physical injury, physical disability, what Paul calls sword. Those are threats, aren't they? You worry about those things? I do. I've experienced every one of these things, every single one of them. When Teresa and I were in Chicago, this is my resourceful wife. We were poor indeed. And we came to a point where it was supper time. We had nothing in that apartment except flour and onions. We had no food because we had no money. And my resourceful wife. Have you ever eaten onion pie? We had onion pie that night for supper. And it was good. You know, I look back on those days with nothing but happiness. Every single one of these physical threats I have experienced, you, I bet, have experienced too. Formidable enemies threaten our physicality. Paul, certainly, they have the power to separate us and stop Christ from loving us or stop me from loving Christ. Paul says something then that I don't like, and I'll bet you don't like either in verse 36. After he lists these physical threats, then guess what he says? He places them firmly on the map of God's purpose for you. Did you hear that? Tithing works. He takes these threats from verse 35, and then in verse 36, he says, it's part of the deal. It's part of the game. As it is written, these things, here, and finally, Paul, thank you, he finally lists these things, doesn't he? Verse 35 lists these things. All along, he's talking about these things. Well, here they are. He identifies them. And then he says, verse 36, they're on the map of God's purpose for you. Instead of skirting these issues, instead of telling you the wealth, health and wealth gospel out there that is a lie, Paul doesn't say God's going to deliver you from these things, from experiencing these things. Paul says, in other words, he's going to use these things and from their consequences deliver you. Do you see the difference? You're going to go through them. It's on the map. It's on his plan. Mindset. And then he says, after verse 36, and a little bit of a depression that comes with that maybe for us, we look at that and we say, yeah, it is God's plan. Then he says in verse 37, they're beaten. They're here. They're God's plan. Verse 37, they're beaten. Not only beaten, they're driven off the field. They're off the field of battle. You see them running. And like God said to the Israelites after they go through the Red Sea, what's he say to them about the Egyptians? Talk about beaten. You won't see these Egyptians anymore. They're off the field. How? Verse 37. Paul says, and he answers the most important question. What can separate us? Who can separate us? The answer, no one and no thing. Verse 37, he says, no, they can't separate us. Because, and Teresa brought out an important point. Wording is very important here. No, in all these things, we are more than victorious. We are more than conquerors through him who loved me. That interceding one who has been raised loves me and makes me more than victorious in these things. If you think God's strange purposes, that our faith is so that we avoid these things. No. Where's the victory there, as Teresa brought out? Where's the victory in no conflict? Have you known people who seemingly escape a lot of this, who seemingly escape it, who seem to ride through life on a magic carpet? If you talk to those people, ferreted out their spiritual depth. You won't be able to identify this person, so I'll tell. Years ago, I had a colleague in town. Actually, he wasn't in town. He was out of town. He was a colleague, and they claimed to be in a covenantal family. And Teresa knows where I'm going with this story. And he lost his... He was practicing in a particular office, and his lease expired, and they wanted him to move to another office. And I remember his wife, they wanted to use my office, and that just wasn't attractive to me. I'm very much a lone wolf. And I said, no, I don't think that'll work out. And his wife was in there talking to me with him, and she said, you know, you just don't know why the Lord allows these kind of things to happen to us. And... you know, that was after we had experienced the trapdoor coming out from under our lives, and I just really didn't even know what to say back. It's those things that Paul lists, these things that make us more than victorious. How? Verse 38 and 39. Now watch this. Watch what happens. Paul says, the reason, whenever you, again, like I said in Bible study, whenever you see for in Paul, he is explaining what he said before. So verse 38, he's saying, you know how we become more than victorious and more than conquerors? Because I'm convinced about something. I'm persuaded about something, Paul says. Well, of course I'm persuaded about something. How could I write a verse like 8:28 if I'm not fully persuaded, if I'm not fully convinced? And here's where I want you to feel the pinch. If the shoe pinches, then so be it. Here's where I want you to feel the pinch. The reason Paul is, what he's persuaded about and fully convinced of, is that there's been a power shift. There's been a power shift. I love this. You meant it for evil for me, and God meant it for good. And Paul says, I'm persuaded about something. First, I'm convinced of that interceding love of Christ for me. Are you? I lose track of that from time to time. I suffer when I lose track of that. I get a mindset of death. So I would invite you to revisit that fact. And how you revisit that fact is you read this. Paul says, I'm persuaded of the love, and then I'm persuaded that there's been a power shift in the universe. Because then Paul, if you look at verse 38, he starts to list the forces that use the threats. Now, this is important for you to understand how the world controls you. The world controls you with threat. The power of the threat. If you don't play my game, you are going to experience affliction, anguish, persecution, famine, poverty, danger, and physical ill health, maybe even disability. You better play my game. Those threats listed in verse 35 are impotent, without a force behind them. You see, the government uses this against us all the time. Buy into the new laws that we've enacted because the threat of affliction is hanging over your head if you don't. The forces that control God's, really are running rampant in God's world right now, have colluded with these threats. You see this? God, they've colluded. The enemy has usurped these things. And Paul lists the forces that are likely to use those threats against us. Death. Life. Well, what does that mean, Tim? Well, life is good. He's talking about the world's system that draws us in. Buy into the world's values, goals, and commitments, or else you're going to experience affliction, anguish, poverty, persecution, ill health, and danger. That's scary. And the enemy knows that's scary. Angels, rulers, things present. And here's the one that bothers me. I bet this is the one that bothers me the most. Things to come. Things to come. Powers, height, depth, the unthinkable. The forces that use the threats and hang those threats over our heads every single day. This has been liberating for me. Because I'll bet you you're afraid of some of these threats. And I'll bet you some of these forces listed here are holding that over your head or dangling it in front of you like a carrot in front of a dirt farmer's mule. You keep following or else I'm going to unleash those threats on you. That's what runs the world. It's what runs our nation, believe me. Buy into our political system, buy into our economic system, buy into our governmental system, or else you're going to get these threats. The force has used that, and that is their power against us. And here's the beautiful thing. Here's what happens. Here's what's happened. Paul says, they have a power. You see that at the end of verse 39 there? He says, they can make a lot of noise. I'm reminded of Macbeth. Remember him? He said, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. See, that's how we look at these threats now. Because Paul says, they still have a power. They have a power in my life. They make a lot of noise in my life. But they can't rise to the level of separation. See, God has taken that power. They can't separate you. They can't stop Christ from loving you, and they can't stop you from loving Christ. In fact, Paul says, how are we more than victorious? As I said at the beginning, what would be the perfect foil to someone who's trying to hurt you? You see how God uses the enemy, uses these forces? God says, in effect, to these forces, he says, go ahead. Do your worst. Carry out the threats. Give them ill health. Give them pain. Give them poverty. Give them affliction, anguish, persecution. Do it. But there's a power shift. Because what I'm going to do now, enemy, I'm going to turn your weapons against you. Their circumstances are going to be no different, but the outcome is going to be very different because the interceding love of Christ, the power has shifted in the universe, and God now takes these things that Paul lists, and it's as if the mighty hand of God reaches out in our lives and takes those things and turns them. You're more than victorious. Because those things are now turned and they will make you Christ-like. You will be conformed to the image of his son. That's how we're more than victorious. What was the ultimate example of this? Jesus of Nazareth stands before the high court on Thursday night, beaten, whipped, dehydrating, and he does not say a word in his defense. And God says, Satan, do your worst. Carry out every one of those physical threats against my servant, and you watch what happens. And Satan took the bait, gave Jesus of Nazareth the worst, and God took those things, turned that, and moved that stone, and Jesus of Nazareth walks out of the tomb. You see, that's our story with these things. That's why we can have a mindset of life and peace. They have a power. But they cannot separate us. Let's pray. Bless us in these things. Turn them to our good. Amen.